My wife likes to buy things, Jess, off a Facebook marketplace, and then she sends me to pick them up. And she gets some good stuff, but I don't really like doing it because the houses are always hard to find and kind of creepy, a little bit scary. It's often the last thing I want to do. But a couple of weeks ago, she found this picture frame she really wanted, and it was just in Warilla, so I went to get it. And it was end of the day, I was tired, a little bit fed up, and I couldn't find a place. It was in a block of flats, and I'm knocking on all the wrong doors. But eventually, I got this picture frame from an old surfer dude. And as I was putting it back in the car, I noticed that Warilla Beach was just across the street, and one of those kind of passageways through the brush was right there. And I thought, I'll go have a look at the beach, because it's winter, haven't seen the beach for a couple of months. Let's go. So I head through this little passageway and past the cigarette butts and old beer cans, and I'm weaving through. And then I get there, and it opens up. And there's the Pacific Ocean, and the big blue sky, and the golden sand stretching to the left of me and stretching out to the right of me. And I was awestruck. It was a glorious sight, and my mood lifted. I felt more optimistic, and I went back to the car in a much better state than when I left it. Well, that's what awe can do for you. It can lift you up. Awe is good for you. Nick Cave said this. I like a Nick Cave quote. He said, "It is good for us to be in awe. Awe is the feeling we have when we encounter the monumental or immeasurable. We experience a sudden shrinking of the self, yet a rapid expansion of the soul." And he's right, yeah? When you're in awe of something, your problems, they don't become insignificant, but they become less significant in comparison to the thing you've just been in awe of. And it does your soul good. It gets this sudden injection of gratitude for the having of that experience. You become more hopeful and more optimistic. Awe does you good. Well, today is Transfiguration Sunday. And on Transfiguration Sunday, we remember the time that Christ transfigured and gave three of his disciples the ultimate experience of awe. If you've got a Bible or a phone, you can open to Matthew 17. You can open to Mark 9 if you like, but Matthew 17 is probably the better one. Usually you don't want to combine two gospel accounts of the same story. But on this occasion, they kind of complement each other. They work together. So Matthew 17. So Jesus gathers three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John. These are his inner circle, his main men, his closest disciples. And he takes them to the top of a mountain to pray. Now, usually, the gospel writers tell us the names of things like mountains, but in this case, they don't. Why don't they tell us the name of the mountain? Well, that's a question we will answer in due time. He takes them to the top of the mountain, and there, things get crazy. Christ's face begins to light up. His countenance is modified. It changes. It goes through a kind of metamorphosis. And his clothes become white, whiter than white. Some manuscripts say they become whiter than snow. And snow would have been the whitest natural occurring thing that these people had ever seen. So when the gospel writers say whiter than snow, they're saying like whiter than anything that could naturally occur. His clothes became supernaturally white. And then things went wild in the skies. Things started to stir, and Moses and Elijah appeared, the two great heroes of the Jewish faith. Moses representing the law and Elijah representing the prophets. And then the voice of God spoke and said, "This is my son in whom I am pleased. I approve of him. I am satisfied with him." And when the gospel writers tell this, they tell it with this kind of breathless intensity. They keep exclaiming things. They say, "Behold, this happened, and behold, that happened. Look, can you see what's happening here?" And the three disciples, they see all this, and they are awestruck. They are awestruck. And most commentators explain that Christ did this because he knew that he was about to die, and that His disciples are about to be severely persecuted, and he knew they were going to need a hope that was bigger than their troubles. And he knew that they were going to need a power that was bigger than their troubles. So he gave them this experience of worship, this experience of awe. And again, most scholars will tell you that the reason we don't know the name of the mountain is that the gospel writers didn't want any of us to think that this was like a special magic mountain where you go to for ecstatic experiences. They wanted it to be a generic mountain. They wanted us to realize that we can have this experience anywhere. Anywhere. In our homes, at church, at the beach, or where we live, you can have it on an actual mountain if you want to. That we too can encounter Christ and be in awe of Christ. So let me apply this to your life a little bit. Maybe you've got some physical difficulties. Your legs are gone, your back's gone, your heart's in trouble. Maybe you've got a bad diagnosis recently and you've been trying to fight it, you've been trying to deal with it, but it's wearing you down and you're starting to feel overwhelmed. Or maybe you're struggling with anxiety or depression. You feel like you're on the edge all the time. It's a constant struggle and you're trying to fight it, but it's wearing you down. Or maybe you're struggling with your own sort of self-worth. You feel like you're not doing enough, not achieving enough, not good enough to be loved. And it's a hard feeling to live with and it's wearing you down. Well, I want to suggest that you kind of stop the fight just for a little bit and seek out an experience of awe. It's mystical and it's strange, but if you seek it, you will find it and it will do you all kinds of good. You'll realize that there is a power greater than your problems, and that power is for you. It's on your side. And you'll experience the joy of being in awe. And you'll get that gratitude. And you'll get the hope that comes with it. Stop the fight for a while and seek out Christ. Get in awe of him. I got a poem here. This is by a guy named Malcolm Dwight. It explains it really, really well. You have to read it like 10 times to get every line, but you'll get most of it on the first time, I hope. He says this, he says, "For that one moment, in and out of time, on that one mountain where all moments meet, the daily veil that covers the sublime in darkling glass fell dazzled at his feet. And there were no angels full of eyes and wings, just living glory full of truth and grace. The love that dances at the heart of things shone out upon us from a human face. And to that light, the light in us leapt up. We felt it quicken somewhere deep within. A sudden blaze of long extinguished hope trembled and tingled through the tender skin. Nor can this blackened sky and this darkened scar eclipse that glimpse of how things really are." You see, he says that this light shone out of Jesus' face, and we can see that light. And when we do, the hope in us, the light of our hope, which may have been long extinguished, it sparks up. And that light leaps out of us to meet the light that came from Christ. And he says, and this is the important line really, this is a glimpse of how things really are. How things really are. And I want to tell you, if you've been struggling with things, struggling with the problems of life on your own, catch this glimpse of Christ and see how things really are. See the reality of things. The reality is Christ loves you. Christ died for you. There is a supernatural power available to you. And the more you behold it, the more you are in awe of it, the more real it will become to you and it will change your life. Yeah? Get in awe of Christ. Get in awe of Christ. Worship him. Amen.